listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus this week. It is Fanboy Versus the Black Panther.
Oh, no.
We'll get to that. I'm your host, JD. With me, I have the two Chrises, Chris Triplett and Chris McFeely. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good day.
Hello.
So here we are on this bright, shining day. And we have been faced with a startling revelation. The Black Panther is going to be the man without fear.
It was about the only piece of news this week. But it's news, all right.
What the hell?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been reading the comics. Did Wakanda explode or something? And now he's just relocating to Hell's Kitchen?
I'm amazed. It's like Marvel said, here's two mostly irrelevant characters. Characters that, in general, the public doesn't care about. Let's put them together.
Let's be fair now. Let's be fair. I wouldn't go so far as to think to say that the Daredevil doesn't have anybody that cares about him.
I deeply care about Daredevil. I just want to read a good Daredevil comic.
I don't know that anybody. Okay, when was the last time Daredevil was relevant? Miller. I mean,
last time I read it was Bendis, and the end of Bendis' stuff was not something to talk about.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying. It's not that Daredevil is a bad character. It's just that I think he just hasn't been well cared for over the last decade.
Reason.
Yeah, and the film didn't help, but so nor did Kevin Smith. But anyway. But I don't know. We talked about Shadowlands and everything that's going on with that last week, and we know that they'd been teasing that there would be a new Man Without Fear. But why?
Now, honestly, I didn't know, so they must have not been doing a very good job of advertising.
I haven't seen the ads in print at all.
I've seen them online, I think.
I only heard about them online, and I heard about them being shown at SDCC and whatever. The ads didn't actually make it to print before they revealed this.
Yeah.
And that's the starting point of all this.
I mean, first of all, just from a PR standpoint, I think this was horribly mismanaged. Because you're absolutely right. They haven't teased it very well, and now they've announced it, but they haven't advertised it. So I guess they were sort of thinking of trying to go with like the whole like three, where it's like who's it going to be, but that didn't go very well. I mean, Marvel keeps trying to do this thing where they tease things that are supposedly unknown, but they're not very interesting things that are unknown. So then they get themselves in the position where they're keeping a secret that nobody cares. I don't know. But
that's not even the issue. That is just so not the issue here.
But no, it's not. But so to get back to the point is that
the issue is that the Black Panther sucks.
Well,
I have nothing against T'Challa personally. I don't know him. But
I hope you don't know him. He's a fictional character.
Yeah. But
the Black Panther hasn't mattered or just mattered at all since Priest wrote the book. Now, I didn't read Priest's run, but I always heard good things about it. Okay, so I'm not judging that. But the character has consistently proven himself to be unable to support a comic since Reginald Hudlin kicked the book off. That book tied into every event going. It tried every cheap, dirty trick to keep its reader base. Tying it in the Marion Storm didn't work. Tying it in the Civil War didn't work. Putting him in the Fantastic Four didn't work. Secret Invasion basically ended the comic. Doom War is Black Panther with Deadpool in to try and sell it, and that didn't work. And it seemed like they'd finally twigged to the fact that nobody gives a shit with this Claws of the Panther miniseries that's about to come out, and then maybe they quietly let it... And compared to good books like Immortal Iron Fist, which was quietly cancelled, and then in a miniseries to let it end, Jason Aaron's Ghost Rider being the same thing, ongoing series cancelled, ended with a mini. Seemed like that's finally what they were doing, but Christ no, they won't let it lie. And that... This could be any book, and I would still be... You know, Black Panther, at one point, was losing so many readers month on month, and a consistent percentage every month, that it would actually have had zero readers within a year.
Wow.
And to be honest, it's not...
Was this after John Romita Jr. left the book? Because I like John Romita Jr. I would have bought the book just for him.
Now, that's what helped the book at this time. I don't remember exactly when it was. I think it was after most of the crossover nonsense had died down before Secret Invasion drove the stake in.
Yeah.
But to be honest now, I'm getting worked up, but to be honest, it's not the fact that it's the Black Panther specifically or anything like that. It's just really indicative of Marvel's attitude. You know, it's like, I can't accuse them of a, it's not like they don't give the little books a try. I'm going to be fair, you know, they did it with Atlas. They did, you know, the consistently low sales, but consistently high critical praise. And they kept trying with it. It's the same for Dance Love She-Hulk. It was the same for Runaways. These things got high critical, high praise, and they give them every chance they could. And even Runaways, they still try to slip them in wherever they can, even though it's on hiatus right now. But the reverse is infinitely more aggravating when they refuse to let something that sucks go for no apparent reason. Where's my Doctor Strange and the Silver Surfer, to pull two names out of thin air? Are two characters proven themselves currently incapable of carrying a monthly title, much like the Black Panther has? Where's their shot? Why have you taken a story from the Black Panther from the 1970s? Because he came to live in New York and pretended to be a teacher and defend the urban jungle in a story that was so dumb in the 1970s that when they undid it, the story that revolved around undoing it revealed how crap Wakanda had become, because he wasn't there, because that's where he's supposed to be, because that's the whole point of the character!
Is it possible Marvel has got some sort of, like, film or something in the works, and they've just got to drum up interest in the character before the movie gets made?
I think they would like to have a film of the Black Panther, because they really want to see... Do you know what? You know, if I may just be frank and say it, they want a black title character in something.
Yeah.
Which is not... It's not a bad goal. It's a laudable goal. I support it, absolutely. You know, diversification and what have you. You know, I mean, they can barely manage to keep a title with a female character in it. They should at least try for one, I don't know, minority or whatever you want to say, you know. But... try Luke Cage or something. He's popular. Maybe. People like him.
Maybe they're doing the wrong thing with Black Panther. Maybe he, maybe he should be like on a team book somewhere. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Black Panther is an Avengery type of character, but he won't fit in at all with the Avengers as they are now.
Mm.
And Reginald Hudlin's ruined a lot of what the character did by completely retconning the history of Wakanda and everything now. Apparently they split the atom when they were living in their mud huts.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, but my thing is that the other problem is that they're replacing one character essentially with another. I mean, they're essentially...
Setting aside anything to do with the Black Panther or anything to do with just with supporting a character who's consistently proven himself a failure, there is this aspect of it. Yes, carry on.
And it's like... I mean, it's like if they were to do Steve Rogers' Iron Man. I mean, it's like, what? Like, that doesn't make... It's, you know, I don't know. It's really odd to just try to take one... I mean, if you want... It seems backhanded is what it seems. It seems like they're trying to say, here's your Daredevil comic, but with Black Panther. So now they want to... It's like they want to make the Daredevil... It's like they want to make Daredevil a minority character. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's like... But it's almost seems, I don't know what other motivation they could have. Why don't they just, if they wanted to do a Black Panther in New York story, they could do that. There's nothing to say that they can't. If they wanted to end Daredevil, they could do that. Why combine the two?
Well, let's be honest now. Surely we can only be a couple of months away from Daredevil number one.
Well, oh, right.
I mean, yeah. that's completely unfounded speculation, but how likely is that? New Daredevil number one.
Young yeah.
Dark
how
Daredevil.
Does it, how does it actually drum up interest in a new Daredevil comic if you're just if it's not even called Daredevil?
You can't make Daredevil into a franchise. I mean, they managed it with the Hulk. I mean, if this is comparable to anything, it's comparable to when Hercules took over the Hulk.
Yeah.
And sales eventually started to creep downwards as people realized the Hulk wasn't taking his friggin' comic back.
But, like, I mean, he's going to be Black Panther. The numbering's not going to change, right? It's going to continue the Daredevil's numbering.
It's going to be on with Daredevil's stolen numbers.
And then it's going to be Black Panther, and then he's not taking that identity. Like, he's not going to, like, be running around in a Daredevil-esque-looking costume.
No, there is
a reading Man Without Fear, like, it's some kind of legacy title you can hand off, which is bold.
No. Yeah, you can't, because that's the whole point.
Yeah, I don't get it.
It seems to be an attempt to replicate the marginal success that Incredible Hercules enjoyed by taking over the Hulk's numbering, because it seems to be of some most tangential reasoning to hand one character's book over to another. We're probably a couple of months away from New Daredevil number one, and then a year from now, Daredevil will take his numbering back, and Black Panther, if it still managed to produce those numbers, will carry on with the 500 numbering as well. But Black Panther by that stage will probably be down to the Hercules level of trying to end its storyline through miniseries again, if Marvel actually lets it die. It is a hideous Frankenstein abomination of an unliving comic that they will not release their hold on, even though it has repeatedly proven itself in need of being put down. This kitty needs a trip to the vet.
I like Marvel comics. Why don't they sell comics?
Well, I'm sorry.
I said, I like Marvel comics. Why don't they sell comics I want?
Yeah, I mean, we come back to this issue where it's just like Marvel keeps making very odd editorial decisions.
That's actually, you know, I mean, my anger is over that. Rather, it's not so much over this. There are some of the specifics do annoy me. The legacying of the title, the fact that they keep harping on this one particular repeatedly proven to suck character, but it's the editorial oversight that is going into this that aggravates me most of all.
It's really dumbfounding. It's not just this title, it's every title.
The most they can hope for here is to trick, and I'm not literally trick, Daredevil readers into continuing to pick up the book until they realize it's not a Daredevil comic anymore.
But what's the point of that? I mean, you're just deceiving your customers.
A little bit more money that month.
But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I guess they're... I mean, in one sense, I guess you're consolidating titles, but they've done this huge Shadowlands title. I mean, we
Which
complained last week.
By any other name.
Right.
This seems to be some sort of attempt... No, that was actually a big conspiracy theory idea I was going to launch into. Now, so I'm going to draw under that before I sound completely insane when I know it's not true. Never mind.
Yeah, who knows?
It's unfathomable as an idea that they feel it necessary to compromise Daredevil in order to make the Black Panther, to continue producing a Black Panther comic. Of all characters.
Yeah. I mean, if any of the other characters, I really thought they were going to go with, like, Moon Knight or something for it, which would...
Yeah, because there's a guy who has repeatedly proven his own comic to fail over and over again, and who's had his own series put on hiatus and cancelled, to have a Shadowlands miniseries, and who shows no sign of coming back afterwards now.
Well, you know, like, Iron Fist and Luke Cage, they showed up a lot in Daredevil, so that would kind of make sense to... be in there too.
Yeah, but they've got stuff going on. I mean, they're busy over in New Avengers.
Like, if it was a Daredevil character, I mean, like, even if it, dude, if like Foggy Nelson was like the Daredevil, it'd make more sense to me than
Black Panther becoming. That's the thing. Like, you're looking at it like if this is a Daredevil story in Daredevil's book, but it's not. It's Black Panther stealing Daredevil's title and numbering.
Yeah, I think you're probably more on with that.
All at life.
Yeah.
Like, they finally decided to finally cancel Spider-Girl. I mean, how much longer can the Black Panther have if Spider-Girl, if they finally wised up and canceled that after years of sucking?
Yeah, but didn't they? I thought they were going with the whole.
Yeah. We had to keep the fucking brand alive. Like, yeah, Rania's Spider-Girl now after repeatedly insisting in the pages of Spider-Man that she's not Spider-Girl.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy that.
Is there... I hate to bring it up, but I'm going to say...
an example of it. Again, I don't want to sound all paranoid and be like, oh, minorities in my comics. But
that's what I was asking.
Getting a comic is because she's Latina. It was the solitary selling point of her original series. It was the only news bite they ever put on the back of the digests. And the comic didn't sell. Nobody ever gave a crap about the character because it's her, and she's really hard to use even now properly because her backstory is so preposterously convoluted. And this isn't going to sell either because it's not going to bring in the Spider-Girl audience because it's not Spider-Girl. Oh my God. You can break for a Valium or something.
I mean, is this an issue? I mean, is the race thing? I mean, are we just making this up? Because, I mean, it does seem like that Marvel's trying to go out of its way to incorporate some minorities in at a time at which DC has been, I don't know, killing them off. So,
well, no, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not an issue for me or something. I'm not, the fact that I'm getting so worked up could. You could easily misconstrue my frustration over it as having some sort of objection to non-whites, non-people.
Well, no, and I don't think anybody thinks that. I mean,
it's like, oh, got to do this, you know. And what does DC do? It's like, yep, here's a new Aqualad. He's black, by the way, but there he is anyway. He's being quietly introduced. Well, not quietly. He's being introduced in the pages of a crossover comic. And that's it.
But that at least makes sense. Like,
I'm not new Aqualad, number one of six, love this character now. He will be the new Martian Manhunter.
Well, yeah, but I mean, at least for that character, I mean, for contrast, I mean, the difference between, like, an Aqualad is that, you know, versus, like, an Aranya is that it makes sense based on what they're doing with the character, how they're introducing it, like, that story-wise makes sense for that character.
It's not as if you need a justification to have a person be a minority, but whenever you do it explicitly to make it a selling point, it always just makes me lift an eyebrow.
Yeah. But I can understand. But I'm at least happy with the way that they're doing that.
You know, character. Let the character inform your story. Do not let, you know, don't come up with the idea. We got to have somebody Latino.
Yeah. Right.
Let's build an idea around that. Which,
right.
I don't know what the thought process behind the creation of Aranya was, as a for instance, but the marketing wrung the fuck out of the idea that she was Latino, screaming that she was Marvel's first Latina heroine. You know, I'm sure Avengers member Firebird would like a word with them, but she's entirely too Christian to bring it up.
Oh, well, I'm sure there'll be more on this as the months come along and then we actually get some stories and see what they do. Who knows? It could be good. Maybe. But we'll see. Anyway, apparently some comics came out this week, although not many.
Not many.
Triplet, why don't you... get us rolling.
Yeah, I didn't read much. I've got Amazing Spider-Man 643. I read a Transformers comic, number 11 of the ongoing series.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. And
I did. Don't spoil it.
Yeah, I won't talk about it. I mean, I can talk about how. If I'm going to keep buying it or not,
We did a mini review. Amy did a mini review on Radio Free Cybertron. So,
okay.
So if you do, if you would like a review, you could check out that podcast.
There you go. And Batman Beyond number 4. I'm still reading this comic.
That's how I feel about Birds of Prey.
Yeah, I mean, there's like nothing that came out this week that just kind of jumped out at me. I mean, Brightest Day we can get into later. We're going to save that for the end. But like, not much really. Just it's like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to talk about this. No, not really.
And yet, if I may interject, 5 Wednesdays this month, 3 fucking Avengers comics all out next week.
Are you kidding?
God.
Oh my god!
Academy, new Academy, Secret, and regular type all out next week.
That's
wow.
That's planning right there.
I'm sitting here with 4 comics in front of me.
God.
Can't wait.
So, anything interesting out of...
I have to do a lot of censoring this show, isn't it?
No, thankfully, this is a show where we cuss all the time.
I'm getting too worked up.
You're fine.
Or maybe children watching, listening.
Yeah, right.
I doubt it.
So what about anything you'd like to review? Spider-Man, maybe, or...
Well, yeah, Amazing 643 has, you know, the luxury of not being written by Joe Quesada.
Wow. It's amazing how that can improve the quality of a comic.
So, like, automatically it's, like, 5 stars better on, a 5-star score, I guess.
God.
But it's not bad. I mean, it's continuing from the last issue where Mark Waid kind of started up the storyline where... basically, like a lot of Spider-Man villains are hunting down what is that character's name? Lily? Is it Lily?
Yeah.
It was the she's the woman that's kind of, that was Menace. You know, the big new Green Goblin-y villain that it revealed that it's actually Harry's girlfriend. Oh my god! You know, and so the villains are hunting her down. And because Doc Ock basically wants her child, she's, you know, she's pregnant. She's about to give birth like any day now, and it's the child of Norman Osborn. There's some crazy drama been going on in this.
What?
Yes. But that
comics conveying the passage of time. Watch out.
Yeah, watch out.
Yeah. So, might as well be a soap opera.
Not much is like going on in the issue, but So, like, basically, you know, Doc Ock has, like, you know, forcibly, you know, taken the baby from her, you know, like C-section style, like in the last issue. So Spider-Man's trying to get the baby, you know, to somewhere where it can, you know, be safe so that the villains don't get it. They just want it because it's Norman Osborn's baby and, you know, Doc Ock's got plans for it or something. So, like, not much is going on in the issue, but it's still... I mean, from the description, it sounds like this comic's terrible. But, dude, compared to the 4 issues of Joe Quesada, it's still entertaining. I mean, because it's still just basic Spider-Man stuff.
You don't even have to compare it. I mean, it's still a pretty... It's a solid comic. It's an entertaining
comic. It's a solid issue. I enjoyed it.
Or Dr. Octopus as well. Dr. Octopus has been so far on the sidelines in, for years now. I'm always up for more Dr.
And he's so weird now. I don't know if you guys have read any of the recent
stuff. No,
he's nothing like Doc Ock before. He's so creepy looking. And
Spidey says that.
I missed out. What happened?
Well, several issues back, they kind of like 43 issues back, they redid his look and everything. You find out that after he had like gosh, I can't remember if it's like a tumor or something. He had something that was wrong with him. He had a medical.
It was because superheroes always take Dr. Octopus down by punching him in the head to knock him out because he's a perfectly normal person otherwise. He's got tumor in there from all the repeated concussions.
Wow.
And he's really his body is like completely dead at this point. I mean, he's got 8
tentacles now, and all of his arms and legs are just bound up in cloth. He's just this body supported by 8 tentacles.
He's basically his brain is fine, but his body's completely dead, and he's just creepy looking. I mean, he's like nothing like. I mean, you know, like Doc Ock was always kind of known for being, oh, he's the fat guy. Well, he's not anymore. He's very skinny.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I need to check that out.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a good issue. It's basically just, you know, Spider-Man trying to save the baby, and the news catch a glimpse of him swinging around with the baby, and automatically the news stations are like, he's endangering that baby. What is he planning on doing? Is he going to kill that baby?
Oh, my God.
But it's fun, and it's a good book, and it's not the end of the storyline. It's continued. I don't know if there's going to be one or two more issues left with it.
It's two.
Two?
I think so. Maybe even three.
Okay. So it's a good book. I say pick it up. I enjoyed it.
Cool.
Let's see. I'll just skip Transformers. I'll just say that number 11 was. I mean, it's gotten a little better. I mean, there's actually something going on. I mean, half the time I don't know what's going on in the comic, but it was okay. I mean, I wish that the book would justify the price, though, because I'm paying like $4 for Transformers ongoing, and I don't feel like I'm getting like a $4 comic. I feel like I'm getting sometimes pretty consistent and nice looking art, and then sometimes I'm getting butt ugly art, and I don't even know what's going on. And the characters keep changing. Like, I don't know, like, from issue to issue, it seems like, what, the Autobot designs are changing? Like, is Bumblebee, like, different in every issue or something?
Yeah, Amy was saying something that they haven't quite settled on the models yet, which is, yeah.
Like, in this issue, like, Bumblebee, I mean, he kind of looks like he's, like, movie Bumblebee body and G1 Bumblebee head. That's kind of what I'm getting.
Well, that's kind of what he's supposed to look like now, because at the end of his own miniseries, he failed to learn the lesson that the comic was attempting to put into it for some reason.
Yeah, I didn't finish that.
Well, he had his body rebuilt into basically what you've just described there. A couple issues, like, he was just drawn with his G1 body, and
his car mode. I mean, it looks like the car, like pretty close the car that was in the movies. So I figured, well, maybe they're just trying to tie it to, like, you know, people that are fans of the movies or something. I don't know. It's got the Combaticons
that's
in.
Work.
Yeah, that's enough for me. So that's enough. That's it. Batman Beyond number 4. It's okay. I mean, it's I'm not going to say, like, run out and buy Batman Beyond. I mean, like, if you really like the show, it'd be interesting to keep reading it, because it's a good kind of, like, you know, this is, you know, what happened after the series ended, or this is what happened after, what was that called, Batman Return of the Joker, I guess, is what it would be, because it follows that. It doesn't follow, like, the events of the Justice League Unlimited episode, you know, where Terry McGinnis is, you know, much older and everything. It seems like it's somewhere between those two stories. And it's, you know, it's... The bad thing about it is the villain is basically, like, you know, Batman Beyond's version of Hush. Which automatically makes you think, okay, this is going to suck because it's Hush and everything Hush was in was not good, and why was that character even created? But I am enjoying it up until, like, the end of this issue, which I'm not going to, you know, reveal the end in case anybody does want to read the comic. But you basically find out who Hush is, and I'll just go ahead and say it's not the old Hush. It's somebody else. he's not like a cyborg. He's not, like, been frozen in a block of ice or something. It's basically a new episode of Batman Beyond, which isn't a bad thing. I think that's a good thing, especially with the art kind of having like a style to it that reminds me a little bit of Batman Beyond, and just getting to see those characters again. You're just getting to see, like, old crotchety Bruce Wayne again. Just, you know, makes me happy. But one cool thing in this issue that I just want to mention is that we never got to see Dick Grayson in the Batman Beyond universe, and we do get to see him and see what he's been up to in this issue. And a really cool image of a really cool part of the issue is where Terry's kind of talking to him, And he mentions about how Bruce always kept like mementos, you know, the giant penny or a dinosaur. Where's your mementos? And he says, oh, I kept a memento. And he shows him, and it's the Nightwing costume, but it's been riddled with bullets and covered in blood. Awesome. Hmm. But yeah, it's good. Like I said, if you want more Batman Beyond, check it out. But I can't guarantee that you're going to like the story, especially after the end of this issue.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
But yeah, that's about me, except for Brightest Day, but we'll save.
Yeah, we got that at the end. Okay, let's see. I read... I'm going to talk about Emerald Warriors first. So, those of you that have been living under a rock, Emerald Warriors is basically Guy Gardner's Green Lantern series. And it's sort of dull. No, not really. I mean, most of this issue is dealing with peripheral characters that looks like they're going to be... Kilowog is apparently going to be going along with Guy, as well as... Gosh, I can't remember... What is her name? The third, like, generation... Arisa. Arisia?
The blonde chick with the...
She's apparently still, like, feeling bad that Yod is sitting in the middle of the sun. Is he still? I don't think he is still.
He's out, isn't he?
I thought he got out, but she doesn't know that.
Yeah.
I don't think she knows that, because I think Ion pulled him out or whatever. Because Ion's locked up with the weird guardian thing. Anyway, so they both, basically, most of the issue is, or part of the issue is dealing with their kind of side stories and the reasons they're wanting to leave to go to the unknown sector. Another deals with more of the introduction of a character that was introduced last time, which was a dude that apparently used to have dealings with the Guardians and now is trying to destroy them or take them over. Apparently he has really powerful telekinetic abilities, and he likes tearing things' eyes out with snakes that come out of his mouth.
Whee! Okay.
So there you go. And he has three eyes, so, you know, that's scary. Anyway, it's very strange. Basically, the first thing that Guy tries to do, the main thing that Guy tries to do is take a detour to get the rest of the red ring infection that he has, because, of course, that's left over. That happened during Blackest Night when he was infected with the Red Lantern, and he was told that the Blue Lanterns could cure him, so they take a detour to the Blue Lantern world, and just as he starts to meet up with the Buddha guy, which he calls Bebar, which is hilarious. the evil succubus, I say evil, but she's just the succubus-looking Red Lantern, shows up and attacks him. And that's it. So not a lot happened. It was really a lot of people standing around talking and not really a lot of interest or excitement.
Did you read the... This is the second issue, right?
This is the second issue.
Did you read the first issue?
Yes. It was also a lot of standing around and talking and contemplation. So
have you found out a reason why this book exists yet?
Well, the indication is that... I mean, part of it is that at the end of... Or at the beginning of Brightest Day or the end of Blackest Night, Guy and Ganthet and Atrocitus made some sort of pact.
Yeah, but I remember that. I just didn't know if maybe they'd explain more about what that is and what they're doing.
This story apparently is dealing with... is going to be dealing with that pact. But we still don't really know the details of it, what it actually entails. Guy keeps talking about whatever it is that he's doing is really sort of making a deal with the devil. and is going to irreparably change his character. I mean, as far as, you know, he talks in the beginning of the issue about how it's going to, you know, wondering how the things that he's doing, the choices that he's making, is going to change how he's viewed by, you know, in the future, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So the indication is that big bad things may be happening, but they're not happening yet. There's a lot of setup going on. So I think I'm going to keep checking it out. It's just, it's still a little slow, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, I'm interested in what those characters are doing. It's just that I don't want to buy another Green Lantern book.
I know. Yeah, I think I'm just going to try and be patient with it. I mean, I like Guy Gardner, so, you know. And now the Kilowog's on board.
I have some kind of comment here, but I just don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know.
It's nothing against Guy. I like Guy and all, but honestly, I've never even paid any attention to Green Lantern Corps. I really just keep my eye on the main GL book.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of Brightest Day tie-ins and everything going on right now, so, you know. Is it necessary right now? No. I think it's one of those that'll pick up later. It'll probably make for a good trade, but
it'll probably be, like, around the end of Brightest Day, then you'll want to have this book, because it will explain things that won't get in Brightest Day.
Yeah, then everything will be made clear.
Yeah.
So... for some reason,
none of
I'm still.
The resurrected characters are in Emerald Warriors, are they?
No. Why? Yeah, which is another good question as to why it's carrying the Brightest Day.
Because usually one of them's hanging around in anything that has a Brightest Day banner on it.
Mm-mm. No, and which is why I think that it's something with the tie-in that's coming later, either with Atrocitus or. You know, the Red Lanterns or something is going to tie to that. Because, yeah, I mean, as of right now, there's nothing that's really tying this to the stuff that's going on in Brightest Day. But that brings up another point, which is that what's going on in Brightest Day? I mean, other than the resurrected thing and now we have, like, their charges, but, I mean, there's still not a lot happening in this particular event that's really sort of tying all the pieces together. To even tie together.
Yeah. They're stretching it out.
You know. I guess
probably
so.
Probably a story they could have told in like 4 issues, but nah.
I mean, because another good example is going to be getting into which was the next issue I was going to talk about, which was Birds of Prey.
I really don't want to imagine that Birds of Prey and The Flash and Titans will have Brightest Day banners on them for a full year.
I bet they, but they probably will. I mean, they, you know, what? I don't know. So yeah, Birds of Prey. Basically, it pretty much leaves off right out where we left off. We find out our two villains-ish guys that we're going to kill Barbara that are actually in love or whatever. I don't know. Anyway. That was supposedly.
You don't know who these characters are. It really might have helped with your new number one issue, new volume series, if you'd bothered to introduce them to us.
Right. So now we have two guys that apparently are in love that we don't even know or care about unless we had read the other stuff before. So, you know, and I'm sure that's great and all, and I don't have anything against it. I just, because I picked it up, like, with the new series, I just don't know who they are, so I don't care.
Mm. I'm sure this is resonating with people who. I've known the characters for...
Yes, which apparently it is, I mean, from everything that I read, so...
Yeah, because before we start into this, we should probably just preface it by saying, we do love Gia Simone.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
To read her works and to follow her on Twitter.
Definitely follow her on Twitter.
And that Birds of Prey has continuously gone back to print. I'm not sure how many printings the first issue has had. And indeed, I believe that some of the subsequent issues even have had more printings. And DC doesn't do reprintings lightly. Marvel tends to throw them out there if they're making money. But DC doesn't go back to the well on printing that often, comparably. But that said,
yeah,
it's just not really doing it for us.
No.
That's too bad, because I was thinking, dude, Hawk and Dove on the team, I was expecting it to be awesome.
That's the draw.
Yeah, really.
Angry Hawk! Not so angry dove!
This whole thing with Black Canary, White Canary, I don't care.
I would have cared if White Canary... Okay, well, it's been...
There's a White Canary?
Yeah.
Have you not been reading Birds of Prey?
No, I'm not reading not. Birds of Prey. I've never read any show Birds of Prey.
I thought you hadn't read it. Well,
sorry.
White Canary is the masked villainess who's been making the lives of the birds hell for the first four issues of the thing. And basically, last issue, we found out she is the sister of some family of martial arts brothers. You know, the bastard sister, the one that wasn't wanted by the father because she had ovaries, you know, girls. Of some family of martial artists that Black Canary beat at some point, apparently, and now she's out for revenge. You know what?
Because she had to kill them, though, but that was... Well, that's the thing, is that she had to go and then kill her brothers because they had disgraced her family.
Said they suffering. You know what, though? Footnote to tell me when that happened might have been nice.
Yeah, because I have no idea when that happened. They could have made it up, but I don't
know. This character is obviously... one of those characters who's been retroactively slotted into the backstory of that particular family. I'm sure that there was no bastard sister mentioned when she fought those, whenever she did, if that actually was something that happened already and not something that's been cooked up for this. I don't know. This book is not making itself open to me. That may be one of my biggest issues with it.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time like picking it up and figuring out what came before.
To be new information and what's supposed to be something that I already know, because even Marvel has started to use footnotes again after going for a long time without using them. They're starting
a lot
to
of them
use
is in well, Amazing Spider-Man.
And why wouldn't you do that? I mean, we're in an age of massive reference. I mean, you can pick up just about anything, and as long as you know at least an idea of where it came from, you can probably go either buy and or find that comic somewhere. And you could go
I
read it.
I don't even mind if you have to point me at the title of the trade paperback, but given that this is DC, that probably doesn't exist. So that's all sort of secondary to the book itself.
Yeah. Cord Tower, is that supposed to be after Ted? I don't know. Is it just a coincidence?
She's named it after him.
So, yeah. Anyway, and then, you know, there is at least a Brightest Day tie-in to this where Hawk has a dreamlike conversation with his brother and something about his purpose. But it's mostly people waking up in hospitals and...
Black Canary is taken back to... Is it Hong? Yeah, she's taken to Hong Kong by White Canary, so that they can. What is it there?
I don't know. There's something about like changing her or training or I don't. It didn't. They didn't make it really clear why.
It's obviously got to be ritual combat because she has to kill her.
Well, and White Canary, I guess, was saying something like if she doesn't, then she's going to kill all of her friends.
Oh yeah, that's right. If she doesn't go with her, she will have them all killed. And of course, Huntress and Lady Blackhawk don't take kindly to this. And the second half of the issue is them going off to Hong Kong after her, even though it doesn't really seem to indicate that a massive amount of time passes. But the cliffhanger on the last page indicates that a little bit has. And damn you, Gail Simone, you wicked bitch, you do have a tendency to throw up a last page that at least makes me curious enough to read the next issue.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not to disparage Simone's work or anything. I think I'm just coming to the same conclusion with Birds of Prey as I came to with her Wonder Woman, which is that it's very well written, it's you know, intriguingly plotted and everything, but I find that, I guess, I'm a little, you know, I didn't realize, I'm sort of surprised to learn, but I guess I just don't really care that much about these characters.
Yeah.
I came to the conclusion, hey, turns out, I don't really care that much about Wonder Woman, and I just let the book go, you know, and... I'll write this story arc out. I think it's only got another issue or so to go, issue or two, but
Yeah, I think Birds of Prey and I will probably be parting ways, much as it seems to have done with superstar headliner artist Ed Benes, who has managed to draw one issue and several pages of the subsequent two. Oh.
Yeah.
Like Black Canary, I don't dislike that character, but I don't want to buy Birds of Prey just to get the further adventures of Black Canary. I'd be just fine if she would just show up like in, I don't know, Justice League or something.
No, I
was looking at it just as a, hey, I love Secret Six, give me some, and I've always heard that this was a great book by Gail Simone. Hey, Gail Simone's writing it, Ed Benes is drawing it, probably great, attractive, you know, I'm going to say sexy art as well, yeah. I'll certainly give that book a go.
Maybe the good stuff's actually before they canceled it. Because I've got like friends that are like big fans of it, been reading it since the original series, and absolutely love it. Don't know what they think about the new volume since they restarted it. So maybe what you actually need to read is like trades of like the old stuff. Is it in trades? Did they put them out?
I don't know.
Certainly some of it is. I don't know how much of it is.
I want to read the spinoff series that Gail Simone talked about on Twitter, in which she said. She said, I think that there should be a sister book, The Adventures of Lady Blackhawk's Legs in a Short Skirt and Boots.
I agree.
I could probably read that. It wouldn't even need to have lettering. But yeah, which is pretty amazing, I do have to say. From an art standpoint, it is an amazing job to have that character continually in a short skirt and fighting.
She pilots a plane very well.
Hey, she fights in these issues, so she's not.
I'm just making it. I don't know much about it.
She doesn't just fly the plane. So, okay, save us, McFeely. Give us some good stuff.
I wish I could. Well, no, actually, I mean, what I do have is two, great books, but I don't have an awful lot to say about them. One of them being Tiny Titans. because that's a 2-minute read, or, maybe a little more than that, but I never have an awful lot to say about it, but, I always recommend Tiny Titans. This particular issue is about Lunch Lady Darkseid's son, Calibac, coming to join Sidekick Elementary. And, a lot of the issue revolves around humor, a large portion of the dialogue of this issue is "Man!"
Okay.
There's some. It's an odd one, but it's as ever. It's always a lot of fun. When Darkseid shows the science professor Dr. Light a photo of his wife, and Dr. Light passes out.
What?
Or when. Little Barda pops through a boom tube from Apocalypse to take the Tiny Titans to the shop where she got her helmet from, which is run by Granny Goodness.
Oh my God.
Little Barda.
Little Barda. And Plasmus making friends with Calibac with candy he grew. And actually carrying on the little subplot about Bumblebee and Plasmus maybe being in like with each other. As they say. And it comes actually down to, there's a very good punchline as well, but I'll tell you what it is. The way Tiny Titans works is that it's never like cover to cover one story. It's always broken up into a series of shorter skits. The first one is called "Bringing Caleb Back." Is the
oh
first
God
title of the. Meanwhile, in the schoolyard, is the next story title. Boom, tubular. This is the way it works.
Oh my God.
So when you read it, do you think of Michael Dorn's voice?
Doing Calibac? Not in particular. This is a kid version of Calibac. Okay. Not particularly, no.
Okay.
Most of his dialogue is, man. So that could be Michael Dorn, I suppose.
Yeah.
But there's a great ad in here as well for the upcoming crossover, the Tiny Titans with Tiny Titans, Little Archie.
Oh my God!
It's going to be awesome. It's called "The Crossover of the New Millennium is Finally Here." Tiny Titans, Little Archie. Oh yeah!
is just the tagline. Because that's there's like the catchphrase of Tiny Titans is, "Oh yeah, Titans!" And they use that when and wherever they can. "Oh yeah, Titans! Oh yeah, candy! Oh yeah, helmets!" or whatever. But this trailer for Tiny Titans actually is just, "Oh, period. Yeah, period."
So the crossover is probably just going to be like a picnic or something, right?
Well, it's a 3-issue miniseries.
Oh my God.
Separate.
That's serious.
Regular Tiny Titans series.
That sounds like some softball also is going to be involved.
Yeah. I will be buying it, and I will be talking about it, so look forward to that. I remind you, this book won an Eisner. I am perfectly within my rights to read it.
Yeah.
The other good book I have this week is the next issue of Christos Gage's Fantastic Four Spider-Man. It's actually called Spider-Man Fantastic Four, but I put them the other way around. Because I don't play by your rules. This one, I talked about the first issue of this. I didn't say an awful lot about the second. This is following on the theme of the Spider-Man X-Men miniseries by the same creative team from a year or two back, where we tell a different story in a different time period every issue. And the first issue was sort of on the 60s, 70s gulf, with it being about Spidey just about to enroll in college, you know, bridging those two eras of Spidey. The second issue was set during the Byrne era in the 80s when She-Hulk was on the team. And this issue is set in the early 90s during the DeFalco run, immediately after the new Fantastic Four storyline, which you may remember was whenever the Fantastic Four were captured by Skrulls and Spider-Man, Wolverine, Ghost Rider, and the Hulk became the new Fantastic Four to rescue them.
Mm.
And it's again, I don't have an awful lot to say about it. It's just an awful lot of fun. The telepathic Skrull who set the whole thing up manages to enchant the minds of the Hulk and the Thing, all the male members, basically, except for Spider-Man, and sets them against everyone else that's there. And Spidey manages to... this was part of the original DeFalco story where she was able to entrance the minds of others and the power of love was able to break the spell naturally. But Spidey gets the idea in his head to use that, so he basically runs around kissing everybody to make the other man jealous and snap the spell, you know. And one of those women is She-Thing, so that doesn't go over very well. What's this? I'm just getting this, you know. He kisses She-Thing, if you even remember She-Thing as the character, you know, and the Thing comes hurt. There's just this great little scene of a little tiny heart breaking into floating over the Thing's head as he looks at the scene, and he comes lunging at Spidey and punches into the ground, but he just misses him. You know, they think it hasn't worked for a second, and then he's all, "You big striving two-timing girl snatching gigolo, I'll murderize you, I'll clean the gutters of Yancey Street with your face." Of course, they don't have anybody to bring. Well, he then goes and he kisses the Invisible Woman as well, which snaps Reed out of it, and the Human Torch, who just completely starts freaking out. "My eyes are shut, but I can't stop seeing it!" of course, they don't have anybody to... Ghost Rider calms his own ass down, but then he does this awesome thing, because they don't have anybody to any way to snap the Hulk and Wolverine out of it. But Ghost Rider turns and to stop Wolverine, he uses his penance stare on him.
Oh. You
know, but, you know, "My penance stare forces a man to experience the pain he has inflicted upon others, and Wolverine has dealt much sorrow in his long life. I shall be merciful. He shall feel the agony he caused on just one day." And Wolverine absolutely freaks out.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But not in a funny way, you know. Spidey comes to the side and says, "Wolverine, are you..." "Get off. I'm fine. There's nothing I don't live with every day." And that's about all Wolverine does in the entire bloody comic, but it's just Christos Gage being so on the money with the characterizations. With so many... I mean, you basically got 9 characters fighting for space here. The new Fantastic Four and the old Fantastic Four, and She-Thing is also there for whatever reason. I forget what shape the Fantastic Four was in at this precise moment in time. And of course, this mysterious figure who's been time traveling his way through the miniseries is ready to unleash whatever his great plan for the destruction of the Fantastic Four is at the end of this issue, which will of course bring us up to the present day. And he looks like Doom, but he's maybe not.
Ooh.
It's a mystery. I'm betting it's Christoph Bernard, Doom's the child who impersonated Doom whenever he had a copy of his brain programmed into him. I don't think Christoph has been in anything since 1997.
Yeah, I remember him. What happened to him?
Literally the last time he appeared was after everybody seemed to die in Onslaught. He and Reed's dad went off to star in a small crossover with X-Force about Latveria being taken over by Dread Knight or something. This was the high caliber of storytelling at the time. I don't think Nathaniel or Christoph has appeared since. And of course, Nathaniel's busy over in Fantastic Four right now, but exactly where that falls history-wise is very hard to tell. But I'm thinking Christoph, because he's had to go places and times where Doom could have easily done these things if he was there, since he was alive in those times that he could have done. And the previous issue, which I didn't really talk about, involved there was actually a bit of a retcon in the previous issue, which was about the set during the time of the symbiote. And anybody who's read like the Venom collected trade paperback will know that a small flying robot drone is responsible for letting the symbiote out of the tube that's holding it. But the problem with the trade paperback collection is that happens on one page or two pages in an issue of Fantastic Four from the time, and the trade paperback never explains where the robot comes from or what. But if you read Fantastic Four at the time, you know it was planting bombs in the Baxter building at Christoph's instruction, and a few issues later the Baxter building was destroyed by him, so he's about the only person who would have known that drone was there. And this this issue, per the original issue of Fantastic Four, the symbiote was able to influence the robot into letting it go, but according to the previous issue, this mysterious traveler was able to reprogram the robot and got it to set the symbiote free. So that's why my bet is on Christoph. It was a bit more of a retcon as well, because they recaptured the symbiote at the end of the story and said, "I've improved its containment field. The only way it's getting out of here is if the building blows up." So, a little bit of history jigging. The reason the symbiote is free now is because the Baxter building exploded at the time. There's also a really great exchange in this issue between Spidey and the Invisible Woman, because after just having to kiss her, he's feeling a little bit weird around her. And it's just a real two-page exchange where Gage just does, it's great. Basically, he doesn't want their friendship to get weird now because of that, because he usually sucks with women anyway. But the point that he means is that she's always been with Reed for as long as she's ever known her. So he's always seen her as the equal of the Fantastic Four, and she's always treated him as a man and not anything else. And Sue just, the way she closes, she just says, Reed and Ben and Johnny, they see her as, wife, sister, family, something to be loved and protected. And she likes that she has something different with Spider-Man. Which is just good stuff all round. Good little mini-series, this. Nothing earth-shattering, nothing groundbreaking, just highly entertaining look at different periods and capturing very well the different thoughts and feelings of the characters and the attitude, just the general attitudes universe at the time. Well worth a look in trade paperback if you haven't been reading it.
Cool.
And cool. That's it. That's everything I have this week, except for our final installment.
So here we are. It's another Brightest Day. Because it happens every, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
this scene does not appear in this comic.
Yeah.
No, it does not.
The speculating everybody was doing based on the cover of this, with Blackwell Lad standing over a dead man looking very dead once again. Nothing like this occurs anywhere within the pages of this comic.
No. Pretty much.
Tired of this.
Yeah, covers have nothing to do with the issues, so whatever. That's been teased forever, though. That's like one of the original. They've been teasing that cover for months. Okay, so a lot of stuff with Firestorm this issue,
which continues for me to be to surprise me, in that I find myself growing more interested in this plot, where it was one of the ones at the very start I wasn't that bothered about.
Yeah. So basically the point we're at now is we now have a JSON primary immersion, or fusion of for the Firestorm of Jason and Ronnie, where Ronnie is the secondary. And what they're figuring out is that with Ronnie as the secondary, he actually controls the transmutation, the ability, so to speak. And since Ronnie doesn't know a damn thing, that really holds the powers back a little bit. Because, you know, he's basically a professional college drunk. So, yeah. And we, at one point we see, of course we see, the professor has him take his glove off, and there's a lot of energy, basically. I don't know that really had the effect he wanted. Anyway, the part that, okay, I'll save my rants, but anyway, there's discussion here about basically that the Matrix, the Firestorm Matrix is changing, that it originally, for some reason, didn't like the professor or didn't want the professor. It wanted something else. It was trying to complete itself, and it's basically the Firestorm Matrix, or the energy itself, is basically a spark of the energy that created the universe. Now, there's some discussion about how the universe continually collapses and explodes, but I'll complain about that later. And essentially, there's a discussion about how they can be really dangerous. So then we come to Black Willette, I guess.
Is that what we're calling him?
No,
that's what everybody.
That's everybody's calling him, but I think that's kind of derogatory.
Damn.
We probably shouldn't do that. Anyway, it's moving into the Aqualad story, which is no surprise, I don't think, that, oh my gosh, they're not his real parents.
Oh no.
Chuck!
Yeah. Not really surprising. But apparently there is some sort of box that he has, which does have the Atlantean symbol on it. Am I correct on that? It does have the...
I actually don't know if that's what exactly that's supposed to stand for. I know Aquaman wears it in his belt, but I don't know if it's...
Is it supposed to be an Atlantean symbol? Now, is that Mira? Is this Mira that's delivering?
Mira is... Mira gave him as a child to this couple.
And,
she seems to know where he is and where they're supposed to be, so I'm assuming that, yeah, she's the one who gave them the child.
That's yes, and as we're apparent, and we didn't mention, of course, last time we did the review, but the indication is that he is the son of the Black Manta.
Yeah.
Now, who's the mom? Who knows?
Pretty smart money on mom is also Mara's sister, but they haven't gone.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I mean, the fact that he's got the ability to mold and shape water.
Yeah. Right. It would seem...
race, you know.
Yeah. And, but his adopted father's sort of a moron.
Yeah. I really figured he was going to die, you know, because it wouldn't be beyond Brightest Day to just off character, off the families, off family members, because they were not necessary to wherever the story was going. But, you know, I'll give them the credit for not killing the guy.
I was actually shocked. I was surprised that they didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing where he's like, I'm going to, we're going to drive you into the water and... It's like you'll be fine, but I won't, tell your mother and all this, and then like he just busts out of the water. I mean, it makes this character start to appear heroic, and I like that. It's a good start for this character.
Mm-hmm.
I like this guy,
Yeah, definitely.
Some stock elements at work, son of a villain or whatever, and I'm sure Aquaman, when the battle for his soul will commence as they, we must have him, you will never have him, and so on and so forth. But the character has got off to a pretty strong start just with the beats of his characterization that we received, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I even thought that Manta was going to off him too, and then, hey,
yeah,
Aquaman
I really
saved the day.
No.
And it almost Aquaman almost seemed like an interesting character there for a minute. That's brilliant writing by Jeff Johns.
That's pretty awesome. That's awesome. Aquaman, Manta, Snap.
Yep.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I almost thought that Aquaman was cool.
Next issue is on. It's on.
Man.
Donkey Kong. Yes, I said it.
Wow. I bet he's going to pull some fish out. It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be crazy.
Anyway, back to the more important story with Firestorm.
One of these two stories more than the other. Which one do you suppose it was?
Yeah. Apparently, Professor Stein has taken a lot of time off and hasn't read Modern Physics in a while.
Well, he's been... Actually, I don't know where he's been.
He did the whole fire elemental thing for a while.
I thought he was dead, honestly.
Yeah, I did too. I was really surprised when he showed up at the beginning of this, because I was like, really? I thought he was gone. Oh, well. Anyway, Professor Stein apparently hasn't read the latest physics and realized that the Large Hadron Collider can't blow up the universe. Or that the universe doesn't blow up and compact and then blow up and compact. But anyway, but there's discussion about...
Before that was...
Sorry?
It was probably written before that Space Probe came back.
Right. Like, this week. Anyway, so apparently Firestorm can't get mad at the... it's basically moving on that element that if they get too agitated or try to fight each other, that they could blow up the universe. Essentially, they control, or they contain... The Firestorm Matrix contains some of the elements that created the universe. It has that power.
The Firestorm Matrix is like the spark that caused the Big Bang. It's that little spark of creation energy from the before time.
Yes. And so, of course, Jason and, basically the professor says, look, if you blow up, you'll destroy everything, and all that'll be left is you. And they're like, us? And then... something else.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum.
Don't quite know why they strung it out for 3 pages when it was patently obvious what was coming.
Yep. and so we have a new-ish character. I don't know. Would you say this is a new character? I think it certainly
seems to be independent from the two of them, so I don't know what we're looking at. I don't really know what we're looking at here. I'm interested to see where they go. It's a Black Lantern Firestorm.
It's a Black Lantern Firestorm, which is being called Deathstorm.
Are they calling it? Oh, yeah, there's the next issue. That's what they're calling it.
Deathstorm.
Well, every hero needs an evil twin. And this guy, he doesn't take over the Firestorm body or everything. Like, Ronnie and Jason are separated.
Yeah.
This Black Lantern Firestorm is left standing alone, separate from...
And it's declared this is going to be so...
Boss.
And it
so can they get back together, you think, or do you think it what they need to combine is now in White Lantern and Doom?
I don't know. He split them apart, and if you remember when Adam was looking at the Firestorm Matrix at an atomic level, there was the dead element that was in there. So I don't know.
So he's like going to be their Venom.
Yeah, basically.
He's probably more of like an anti-Flash or whatever
Professor Zoom.
Like a Professor Zoom style. But much more evil because,
he has death in his name.
He has death in his name. He has, not only does he have death in his name, but he's from the whole mystical Blackest Night thing. And apparently he has the emotional thing, too, because, invoke
the characters in the emotional spectrum.
Yeah.
So he still has all those Black Lantern traits as well.
So I guess he's going to still eat emotions or whatever they
want. The indication is, too, that this is supposed to be, this may be even the big villain of Brightest Day, because the indication was that it is Deathstorm that's going to try to kill the entity.
Well, you did say he was the most powerful thing in the universe, so if Deathstorm has it, then yeah.
Well, if he's he's the last living Black Lantern that's still within this realm, so it will make sense that he's going to go after the entity as well.
See, that's the thing. Is he, or is he not? Because the indication from Brightest Day previous, in which they're showing them resurrected, I think they're still Black Lanterns. But they haven't. They've been giving their independence back, but they haven't been given their lives back. Professor Zoom is the only one that's been fully resurrected.
They have to complete these tasks
in order to be fully resurrected, which would explain why they keep flashing back and forth between White Lantern versions, Black Lantern versions of themselves.
They haven't come back all the way, as we've been saying since virtually issue one. They haven't come back right. They haven't come back all the way yet.
Yeah, because especially like Martian Manhunter, I mean, he's constantly, I mean, we've seen his Black Lantern version.
That's what several times. Shapeshifter.
So could it be that when they came back, that maybe they're just a bunch of sleeper agents left over from what's his name from Blackest Night?
Who knows? I mean, that's possible.
Just
too.
Waiting for that when their mission is complete or something, and then they're back as Black Lanterns, and it's back to the beginning.
I wouldn't say that because they were resurrected. They were brought back essentially by the white light.
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah, by the entity. So I don't know. It's damn you, Jeff.
We're
about
a third of the way in now. We're more than a third of the way in, actually. So.
Mm-hmm. But like I said, I have a complaint about the science because the two things which, and it's fine, I understand it's fiction, don't send letters, but you know what I mean. But you can do a half a second of research if you're going to base the character on it, if you're going to talk about it, and if you're going to make this a major character element, do a half a second of research. First of all, the universe does not collapse, right? That's been known for the last at least 15 to 20 years that. Our universe does not collapse. It exploded once. The particles in the universe are going to continue to fly apart until they're completely disseminated and there is nothing left in our universe. Or essentially, the particles are so far spread out that there's virtually nothing. That's at least scientific consensus at this point. So there is no big collapse. Second of all, the Hadron Collider thing, it's not even a remote chance. It's a remote chance that it may create a black hole, but even if it made a very, very small black hole, it would basically die from radiation death almost instantly. It would be too small to do anything. So,
keep in mind, we're also reading a comic from a universe that's gone through multiple crises.
Right, and yeah, exactly. So
that's
I mean,
I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't know, but, I'm reading a comic about a man made of fire who's powered by energy from before life, so I'm not so bothered about black holes.
If you're going to pull real science out, at least do a little bit of research. I don't care if you do made-up science, whatever. But, I don't know. I think that's just sort of invoking pop fears for no reason. But anyway.
I don't know. I think that this the cyclical universe is part of DC, though, after all.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, if that's the way that universe is, that's fine. But it's not the way this universe is. So, I don't know. Is the DC universe that way, though?
There's a man that runs around dressed as a bat.
Again,
I'm sorry. I said there's a man in this universe that runs around dressed as a bat. That's all I need to know.
Right, that's the important part. That's the important thing.
As far as the cyclical thing goes, I mean, didn't the previous universe end when the third world ended, and then it exploded in the God wave that heralded the creation of the new universe in the fourth world?
Okay, you're beyond me then.
No idea.
Yeah, wow.
Okay.
Was this countdown? I don't know. I didn't read it.
No, this is oldest.
Okay.
Sure. That I don't know. Okay, anyway, it's good stuff. I'm definitely interested in this Deathstorm stuff, though. And I like Firestorm. Don't get me wrong. I really like Firestorm. So I'm definitely interested in seeing what they're going to do with that. So, no, this is good stuff, though. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's getting to be a little much, though. I think I'm starting to sort of feel the pace of it, if that makes sense. It's sort of wearing me out where it's like every 2 weeks we've got Brightest Day, and it's starting to almost seem like work.
No, I don't know. I'm still finding plenty to read.
It sort of felt more like work back at the beginning for me.
The last couple
of issues, yeah, I've gotten real interested in it, except for, you know, whenever, you know, we get back to Hawkman and Hawkgirl, you know, I don't
Yeah,
know
that. That'll be next week. That'll be the next issue, I'm sure.
But everything else I've been pretty interested in, want to see where it's going.
Yeah.
Yep, it's taken a big upswing, I think, in the last couple of issues. It started off all right, and then it dipped pretty quick. But it's upswinging pretty well.
I didn't care about Firestorm, and I was like, dude, Hawkman and Hawkgirl, this is going to be awesome. And what? I don't care about Hawkman and Hawkgirl. What's going on with Firestorm?
Exactly the way
I'm I mean, brilliant move.
I don't care about the Aquaman story either, but...
Dude, Aquaman, it's on next issue. It's on!
Yeah.
It'll be 3 issues for that.
Well, no, actually, usually the thing about Brightest Day is when they leave it on a direct cliffhanger like that, they usually do go back to it, you know?
Yeah.
When they leave it on a moment of drama, it's like if they leave it somewhere where it can lie for a minute, like, you know, Hawkman's busy putting his army together now, so time can pass and we can come back to that story when something's actually happening in it.
Man, but, I really don't. He hits him with a squid.
Yeah.
Hit him with a squid.
There you go.
Squid.
Oh, my God.
All right.
Okay. Well, there you go. There's your comics for the week. Please, if you would, go to the website, tfradio.net. That's where you're going to find all the great stuff that we do. Radio Free Cybertron, New Soundwave, Outside the Cage, Superhero Time. And this show, and past shows as well. There's a huge archive there, so if you want to check out even shows from the past, you can do that. We typically do this show live. We typically will do the show live somewhere around 2:30 Eastern time. That's in the U.S., so for those of you in England-ish, it's 9:30. There you go. So you can check it out that way as well. Check us out on Ustream. Go to tfradio.net/live, which is where we do the live show. So again,
follow us on Twitter at tfradio.
Tfradio, yep, that's the Twitter link. And of course, you can go to the website and you can find all of our Twitter feeds, and some of us even have blogs, I think, that sometimes get updated, but I don't think any of us do. So anyway, now that I think about it, yeah, I pretty much Twitter. There you go. You get Twitter. You do a lot of Twitter. You're very good at Twitter, sir. I'm not.
Yeah, but whenever you're standing at work and nothing's going on,
I guess so. Yeah. What was the deal with? There was something about girls in the store or outside the store.
The shop across the way was having it's celebrating its 20th anniversary. And that apparently was licensed to dress their rather attractive staff members up in slinky dresses and high heels and have them hand out flyers. So that livened up my Saturday.
Always feel free to twitpick any of that stuff for the benefit of your...
If I had any battery in my phone, I may well have.
Okay. Very good, sir. Okay, anyway. So thank you so much. And please tune in next week when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.